the OTB Podcast Network.
Okay, Classic Game Club, 2005 All-Ireland Football Final, Kerry against Tyrone. We've done two Kerry games in the Classic Game Club, what are we, episode 12, 13, two devastating losses for Kerry out of the two Kerry episodes we've done. Spotting a trend, I think so. Ger, this is your shout. Tommy, you're welcome as well. Ger, why did you want to do this one?
Because this is one of the few times that I can remember two all-time great teams going up against each other close enough to the peak of their powers.
Sorry, just not to make me feel painful or feel sore about something that happened 15 years ago. This is just to do with the quality of the game.
Well, no, this is also to remind you that the team of the noughties was indeed Tyrone, and to piss you off. I actually want to do a deep dive in this whole three-game series. I think I actually want the next two episodes to be the other two games either side of this, so we can round out and give a full picture of just how dominant Tyrone were against this Kerry team. And
that's a good idea. No,
I mean, it is a good idea, right? But all joking aside, though, and winding you up aside, because we've got a full 45 minutes to do that, I do want to make the case that this is legitimately one of the few times that I can remember where there are two absolute all-time great teams going up against each other. You've had two hall of very good teams up against each other in years around this. You would say the Mayo team are an all-time very good team as opposed to all-time great team. Dublin didn't have a rival who you would put in the top three or four teams of all time on their way to the five in a row. But this Kerry team, the majority of the one between four and six All-Irelands, this Tyrone team broke a county's duck, worse than a famine, Mayo people, worse than a famine, and won three All-Irelands in a five-year span. So these are absolutely two titans of the game playing in an All-Ireland final in glorious sunshine. And it was a close enough game.
Yeah, it's not a bad set of criteria that it's ticked all those boxes, really, I think. Tommy, where were you for this? What do you remember?
Where was I? God, I don't remember where I was watching this, but I know that this game had a massive impact on me growing up as a young lad who was crazy about football.
Why?
That's because I actually just got it as I watched the game back, how much I loved Philly Jordan and Brian McGuigan and the likes of Declan O'Sullivan as a footballer when I was growing up. When I was 12 years old, and I was not very fast when I was 12. I was not very good at catching the ball when I was 12. I was tall and I was lanky and I was a bit awkward, but I really improved as a footballer from the age of maybe 12, 13, 14. And that's when I kind of started really becoming obsessed with wanting to be a Gaelic footballer and wanting to play it when I got older. And when I was 12, Tyrone Kerry happened. So it's no coincidence that my favourite player growing up was Brian McGuigan. And when I played wing back as a kid, I wanted to be like Philly Jordan. Like, there wasn't mid footballers that I wanted to be like. Of course, I love Graham Garrity, but the two players that I wanted, that I loved more than anything, were Brian McGuigan and Philly Jordan. And it kind of reminded me why that was. Like, McGuigan was just unbelievable in this game. And Philly Jordan, like, I don't know why I didn't like Tomás O'Shea over Philly Jordan. I just really liked Philly Jordan as a footballer. He just had that cutting edge and that, I don't know what he had, but that's kind of what this game brought back for me. I don't remember watching it, but I do know that this game made me obsessed with Gaelic football.
Were you working at this one, Ger?
I don't think I was. I'm pretty sure I was at home watching this on the couch. My abiding memory is at some point in the TV coverage, and I couldn't see it on the YouTube stream that we watched, there is a behind the goals. It might have been on the Sunday game that night where they had the behind the goals camera of the Canavan goal. And I legitimately thought that it was one of the best things I've ever seen in sport, because there's kind of it's like a ballet where Jordan's long ball comes in and there's a brilliant fetch. And you can see from behind the goal exactly the arc of the run that Canavan makes. And then you can also see there's a little curl and a bounce that takes the ball away from Dermot Murphy as Canavan finds the one spot of the goal where the giant hulking frame of Dermot Murphy won't reach it. And there's no blasting. There's like all of his career comes down to this single moment just before halftime in an All-Ireland final against Kerry to define their greatness.
And he passes.
And he's injured. He's injured. And there's nothing in his mind other than there's one spot where this is going. It's going to go in the right spot and I'm going to score it. And yes. And as his jersey gets ripped off him at the end. I wasn't sure if Gooch had ripped his jersey or the fans had ripped his jersey as they hoist him shoulder high. But that's my abiding memory of actually watching at the time going, I've never seen anything as beautiful as this.
Chair, I can confirm that angle that you're talking about, because like that is imprinted in my brain. That was on I'm not sure if you're talking about the slow motion angle, but there is the behind the goal angle of Muggsy fetching the ball. And yeah. Can I actually turn the camera and show it on my laptop here? Because it'll just show you how far away Peter Canavan is. Look at the height of Muggsy there. Can you see that all right? I know it's a grainy enough image. And then look how far Canavan is when that ball comes to him. And then
pause.
I know. I don't know whether we get away with that, lads, but like that's worth showing. Like that is like one of the all-time great All-Ireland final goals. It was. I got tweeted last night by a friend of mine from the Aran Islands, who's a big footballer over in Galway, and he was listening. I think he was listening to one of the Classic Game Clubs, and he sent me the Declan Meehan goal, the Paul Clancy pass we were talking about, and he said, "Name a better All-Ireland final goal in terms of like iconic status and something that I remember. This goal was unbelievable."
Yeah,
I agree.
It's the most famous All-Ireland final goal, I think, bar maybe one of the own goals that Mayo scored in 2016. Like as far as like finding the back of the net goal. Oh, no, and sorry, Owen Merchant. Owen Merchant will always go down as one of the greats in terms of a green flag that was raised in an All-Ireland football final. I'm just trying to think. Nothing kind of comes close. Against Kerry as well. Really? Yeah. Well, no, I mean, what I meant to say there is this entry. That's a key part that I left out there. as we're seeing the goal again, we can play that out because this part might get popped for copyright. Yeah, one of the great goals.
Sorry, I got excited.
One of the great goals from All-Ireland Football Finals. This game was my first introduction to a thing called the Nally Terrace. I'd never heard of it before. The 2005 All-Ireland Final. So, perfect bird's eye view right in front of me, Peter Canavan putting that into the back of the net. Just to go through some of the context for this All-Ireland final, All-Ireland champions of 2003 versus
All-Ireland champions.
Come on.
Your face is relaxed, but actually inside your a steaming mass. This is your contradiction here, Owen. You're raging and yet you're sad, but you're also kind of grateful that you had such a great team who was the second best team of the decade to cheer on for so long.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not a nice feeling going back to watch this game. There's no two ways of putting it. It's not a pleasant feeling. It's not, it's a strange thing to talk about because everybody's like, oh, at least you went and you won the All-Ireland the year before that and you won the two the year after that. But there's something about all these Tyrone games that really hurts. I've never watched this game back before now. I do, like, it'll be tattooed on the inside of my forehead for the rest of my life. Seeing Peter Canavan score that goal right in front of us, I can almost remember exactly what my dad was saying, exactly what the randomer who was standing beside us. We were actually like, I would think I was up on his shoulders or actually up on the concrete wall at the very back of the Nally as these conversations were taking place around me at the time, where everything just kind of felt it had just fallen to pieces at that moment. That Peter Canavan's goal was so unbelievably significant in the journey of this All-Ireland final. It was before halftime, but people knew at that moment it was like, oh my God, we are in severe trouble. And to be honest with you, like then it's just kind of like a revolving door of Peter Canavan's name throughout the second half. Like, of course, it's not this week that I realize that Peter Canavan comes off the bench. It's one of the most famous pieces of football trivia. And it feels like it's something that I'd never forgotten almost. I don't know. It's a hard thing to sum up because I think watching it back, you get a greater appreciation of how deserving Tyrone were of the All-Ireland on this occasion. But at the same time, there is almost the same feeling you get while watching episode 3 of Star Wars, where you're watching Anakin become Darth Vader. And you're like, I know what is going to happen here, but it is still heartbreaking to see all these steps getting achieved on the way to the darkest endgame happening. And seeing all these things, like you can't get any happiness out of Gooch having a few good moments here and there, Seamus Moynihan looking good at the start, because you all know things will go steadily downhill. And it's just a terrible, terrible viewing experience. That can be true, but it can also be true to actually take your cap off and credit Tyrone for how unbelievably brilliant they were in this All-Ireland final. I would say, and if we're staying in the bubble of the 21st century, the most complete All-Ireland final performance by a team.
Were you tense watching it? Did you think that you had a chance at any point? Were you like, oh yeah, come on, that's it, go on?
Like rewatching it or watching it the first time?
Rewatching it.
Like, of course, when Darragh Kinnaird scores that goal, you're like, are we watching the right game here? Or are we sure that Kerry actually lost this game? Because Gooch is looking pretty good. And then Pascal McConnell comes racing out of goal and tells Gooch where to go, which we will get into, And I don't want to come across like everything I'm going to say throughout the next little while is actually what I was thinking at the very time. I am going to say things about certain tackles that went into Kerry players that I felt at the time. But I can genuinely say this from the bottom of my heart. My overall emotion after watching this is fair play to Rowan. Like, absolutely fair dues to you. And any Kerry person who can look back into the 2005 final and not say that, well, they've got a serious case of sour grapes going on. We can get into 2008 some other time. We can get into the team of the decade perhaps today. But on 2005, as a classic game, which this is, it's a classic game club, anybody who says Tyrone were not fully deserving of being All-Ireland champions in 2005 is talking nonsense.
I think we will get into all of that. I think one thing is very, very, very clear from the outset. And, I know you're speaking for your people here. Kerry's psyche was so brittle when it came to Tyrone. You're talking about a goal before half-time. You're talking about a man who was injured. Peter Canavan, regardless of how many people call him God, is not God. Yet Kerry were beaten in this game. They were unbelievably good in that first 10 minutes. Kerry were off the charts good. Tomás O'Shea scored, like Canavan gets reintroduced and O'Shea scores that goal and the game should have been Kerry's. When Kerry came up against Tyrone, they were brittle.
I've got a theory on that, and I just want to go through like a couple of bullet points I have for context, considering we tend to go through this every week. So just context, as I say, 0-3 champions against 0-4 champions, 0-5 overall. This is an unbelievable year for Tyrone. Let's not forget the 10-game All-Ireland winning streak. It's something Mayo tried to go close to a couple of years ago, but it's always held up now as possibly the greatest All-Ireland's ever won. Sean Kelly said as much before handing Brian Duher Sam Maguire afterwards. 9 games up until this point. Cavan take them to a replay. Armagh beat them after a replay in the Ulster final. Dublin take them to a replay. And then they win against Armagh in the All-Ireland semi-final. The trilogy, that is a trilogy that's worth doing as well. Pipped them by a point. Kerry, on the other hand, a vastly different journey to the All-Ireland final. Go through the front door. They beat Cork by 13 points in the All-Ireland semi-final. But really, context, the only thing that matters is 2003. That is the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter that it's two previous All-Ireland champions going up against one another. It is the semi-final of 2003 that matters in the context of this. And I'm not sure brittle is the right word, Tommy, but I wanted to actually get into the psyche of Kerry after 2003. And my theory is that the worst thing that has ever happened to Kerry football, maybe not the worst thing that's ever happened, but certainly a very bad thing that happened to Kerry football, was Pat Spillan and his puke football rant in 2003. So what that gave was, if you were an impressionable Kerry football fan sitting down watching that 2003 All-Ireland semi-final, you would come away from Pat Spillan's comments thinking to yourself, right, I can't believe the bad guys have won. The bad guys have actually won. But do you know what happens? The good guys tend to win out in the end. Those bad guys are going to get beaten eventually because the way they are going about playing football is bad. It is not the right thing to do. It is puke. It is vomit. You stick two fingers back your throat, you produce Tyrone football. That is what Pat Spillan is saying to me. However, if Pat Spillan had been filled with a bit more nuance and actually said, look, there are certain elements of what Tyrone are doing which perhaps aren't in the best of taste, like we can get into that in a while, but as a pundit, I'm also going to point out the amazing things that Tyrone are doing. Their swarm defence, absolutely sensational. Their possession football, absolutely revolutionary. The running, the fitness, on a completely different level. Perhaps then Kerry people might have looked at them and said, well, God, we are the best footballing county in the country. Imagine if we managed to combine some of what we do well with what Tyrone did well in 2003. Let's work on our swarm defence. Let's turn Tomás O'Shea and Mark O'Shea into hard-running defenders because we have the players to do this. Let's make this a 15-player game. 14 players, the goalkeeper wasn't that involved back then, but players can pop up in any other part of the pitch because we are the best footballers in the country. We can absolutely do this. We don't have to resort to the dark arts all the time, although we probably should, but there is so much from what Tyrone did in 0-3 that we can take forward. But they didn't. And I'm not sure if that's a brittle psyche, Tommy. I think that might be just an air of arrogance.
Hey, well, sorry, you're right. You got it at the end there. It is an air of arrogance. And it's not Pat Spillan's air of arrogance. It's the entire county's. It's the sense of entitlement that you have when you have 30 All-Irelands already banked. And you know what?
32.
Maybe that's the whole... Well, at that stage, was it not?
By 0-3, it was 32.
Was it? Okay. Is it 36 now?
37.
Okay, great. See the way they know all these numbers. It's like you mistake Robbie Keane's cap total or a goal number and he corrects it straight away. That's exactly the arrogance that we're talking about. This is what happens when you become an empire. You become fat and lazy, like what happened in Britain. You just become, oh, look at us, bloated on our own success and cash and wobbling my way past. I'm sick of that northern crowd up there. If they were set dancing twice a week, we'd all be set dancing twice a week. It's an immortal line, but it wasn't Pat Flan who said it. Like, that's the thing. I think you're right. It was arrogance to think, well, our footballing skills are going to eventually work our way through this. But when you run into that brick wall, when Declan O'Sullivan gets surrounded by six or seven guys, even Tomás O'Shea got caught in possession once or twice in the game. I was like, Jesus Christ, I didn't expect that. I think he got there in the end. It wasn't Pat Flan's fault.
No, but I think it's an important kind of note to pick up on. Sorry, Tommy. I just think that it's the most famous thing that's been said. And, like, I think people bought into that. People bought into this idea that Tyrone were the bad guys. And it was a nonsense. Like, and it's really frustrating. Like, how good would would especially Mark and Tomás O'Shea have looked in that Tyrone team, for example? Perfect players in that system. Like,
I mean, but you can't say that they were any better than Ricey or Philip Jordan. Like, they already had those players. Ricey, at the end of the game, was the fastest player on the pitch. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing.
Ricey was unbelievable.
But my point is that even just a little bit of the nuance that Tyrone managed to bring to the pitch, and in fairness to what Mickey Hart managed to bring to the pitch, if that was actually instigated and carried, if they had a plan B, for example, who knows what might have happened. I just think that there are so many regrets and there was so much underachievement, actually, that you think could actually be the end result of those few years for Kerry.
Just on that, Owen, I agree that perhaps brittle is the wrong word, but arrogance certainly isn't the right word for what happened to Kerry in the midst of that game. Like, it was there for them. Arrogance perhaps in the build-up, but even during that game, at multiple times, that game was there for Kerry to win, but there was something in their heads when it came to Tyrone, and it wasn't just arrogance. There was something else there.
I agree, yeah. There definitely was. There was a hoodoo. There was definitely a hoodoo, but what is the psychological element of a hoodoo
is it not just that Kerry didn't tactically prepare for the onslaught, even though they had watched all of those games that year that Tyrone played and they'd gone up against this same team and knew exactly what to expect, but they hadn't changed their game plan enough. What was their plan for Dewar? Why are they taking Galvin off? Why are they taking Moynihan off? Like, none of these decisions make that much sense. Oh, hindsight, blah, blah, blah. But, like, also, why didn't they protect Gooch?
Can I just say one more thing?
Go on.
On top of all that, where the hell was Kieran Donaghy?
On his substitute.
Like, they lumped ball after ball into the square. Kieran Donaghy emerged in the scene in the 0-4 underdogs. He's sitting on the bench throughout 2005, played in the league. Don't tell me he wasn't ready. Kieran Donaghy is footballer of the year next year in 2006. Don't tell me that he's not ready in 2005. The team of the decade is sorted. If that man is on the pitch, Jack O'Connor brought on Mike Frank Russell. He brought on Darren O'Sullivan. And then he ended up bringing on Infus Morris and Brian Sheehan towards the end. And what happened in the last 15, 20 minutes? And it happened in the first half too. Ball after ball went into the Kerry forward line. And Chris Long, he's not going to be my second match. But Chris Long was an unsung hero when he came on for Joe McMahon in that second
half. Sensational.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
But Kerry played into their hands. Darragh O'Shea, I love Darragh O'Shea. But, like, Darragh lumped a couple of balls in. Tomás lumped a couple of balls in. And Gooch and Mike Frank should have had them, and they were beaten. Donaghy was ready. And if you're talking about regrets, if you're talking about arrogance, if you're talking about things that Kerry did wrong, not having a plan B, their main problem was that Kieran Donaghy was sitting on the subs bench.
You're saying that they didn't even do plan A correctly with the resources that they had at their disposal, which is true. Just to go through the teams as well here, like as you say, I think there is a bit of appreciation we should take from the two lineups here. It's possibly the best football final we've had this century, and two of the best lineups. Sure, you're about to say something before I get into the teams there.
You're right. Exactly that. Like we should admire the fact that this is two all-time great teams going up against each other, and it goes down to the wire. And I can only imagine, like, because you know how tense it gets now in these All-Ireland finals, like how tense it was last year for the drawn game. It was unbearably, it was so quiet in Croke Park for about 10 minutes, where everyone was like, Jesus, I don't know what's going to happen here. Can you imagine what that atmosphere must have been like for Tyrone and Kerry? Like, Jesus Christ.
Do you remember that, Owen?
Yeah, you're definitely paralyzed by it, but I think I don't, what age was I? Like 11? So you don't fully appreciate it at that age. Like, I think I certainly wasn't any more tense than I've ever been in my entire life than I was during the drawn game, for example, last year. I think the older you get, the more these worries actually tend to bog you down in the middle of a match. So I was still fairly blasé about it when I was 11 years old, but could it was still devastating, absolutely devastating. And Peter Canavan, like, just thorn in the side. The full Tyrone side, Pascal McConnell in goals, Ryan McMenamin, Joe McMahon and Mickey McGee was the full back line. David Hart, Conor Gormley, Philip Jordan in the halfbacks, Enda McGinley and Sean Kavanagh, a fairly formidable midfield. Brian Duher, the captain at wing forward. The other half forwards are Brian McGuigan and Ryan Mellon, with a sensational full forward line of Peter Canavan, Stephen O'Neill and Owen Mulligan. Kerry then, Dermot Murphy in goals, Mike McCarthy, Aidan O'Mahony and Tom Sullivan, the full back line. The two O'Shea's and Seamus Moynihan at halfback, Darrow O'Shea and William Kirby was the midfield. Liam Hassett, Declan O'Sullivan, the captain, and Paul Galvin, the half forwards. And then Gooch, Darrow Kaneda and Owen Brosnan made up the full forward line. And yeah, like the Kerry tactic was to get the ball in, route one to Gooch, even if it is 4 feet above his head. Like, in ways you can say, well, they might have realised they had arguably the best player of the generation inside, get the ball into him quickly. And it doesn't matter what sort of ball it is, if he wins one out of three of those, he might cause a bit of damage. He scores 5 points, he sets up O'Kaneda's goal. And perhaps the worst thing that happened was that it started off decently. Like, it didn't get off on the worst footing. And that when Kerry actually had a few balls that stuck in the first 12, 15 minutes, they were like, well, we are doing this for the full game.
I think we could actually do like a 3-hour podcast on this one game, because just when you're going through the teams, there are so many different nuances to it. But let's start with what you're talking about with Gooch and the tactic. It worked brilliantly at the very start of the game. It works until he's blinded. Like, there's a good half an hour period of the game where I'm not sure he could see where the ball was. But that first ball that comes in, you forget, like, Gooch, because he was a superstar from the time that he was 17 or 18, he was actually a big man. He was a tall, athletic. He had a brilliant spring, so he can get balls over people's heads. And the hand pass for the O'Kaneda goal is sensational. It loops and drops to just the one point where O'Kaneda is going to be able to get that ball and drop it onto his foot. And again, Darrow Kaneda's finish, sensational. Is this a year after Darrow Kaneda's kicked 12 points in the All-Ireland final?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like an all-time brilliant full forward line that Kerry have in this game too. Like, Jesus, what a game.
It was unbelievable. And I think we watched it back in Irish, and I think the commentator utters this line after 90 seconds. Niaka Misha Alehide Hush Reeve Aglihakanish Naharan. I've never seen such a start in an All-Ireland final. And that's after just 19 seconds of hits before that first score. Was it Gooch that kicked that first point?
Yeah.
It was Moss O'Shea got turned over. Ryan Mellon got turned over. Mark O'Shea is turned over by Sean Kavanagh. McGuigan is turned over by Seamus Moynihan. And it goes up the field and Gooch puts it over the bar. That's 90 seconds, lads. But, Jared, that moment you referenced, Gooch getting blinded, that's 9 minutes in. And for me, that was like the first small battle that Tyrone had won in that game.
Just on that, so Gooch has written about this in his book. And there's a good insight into this, actually, in the book. So I'm just going to go through this. He says, there was an incident in the 05 final that had an adverse effect on me for much of the first half. I was making a run in around the penalty spot, just trying to lose my man. Tyrone's goalie, Pascal McConnell, kept charging out towards me as if trying to block my run. On this one occasion, his glove made contact with my face. I got this horrible sensation of grit in my eye and immediately went down. And all around me became a symphony directed towards the referee, Mick Monaghan. Diving ref, diving, diving, diving. They were like squawking birds on a wall. I'm telling them to F off at themselves when Monaghan comes across to me and says, whatever you do, do not retaliate. So I'm sitting on my arse in Croke Park, barely able to see out of one eye, and the ref's telling me not to retaliate to something that hasn't, it seems, even merited a free. There are two umpires standing, hands behind their backs, no more than a few feet away. Don't retaliate? Well, what are you going to effing take action or what? I ask Monaghan. His silence is the answer I expected, and I'm rattled now. Maybe we're all rattled. Rattled and frustrated. Rightly or wrongly, I reckon I've just been taken out of the game, possibly in a premeditated move. And the ref's only answer is to tell me not to hit back. Tyrone were never going to go holding doors open for me, were they? We knew something was coming. But what do you do when it lands? Maybe the lack of anger in us as a group that day said more about us than we were willing to absorb at the time. Because all we gave Tyrone in return was just noise. Powerful stuff from Gooch, and a fairly big acceptance for the Kerry psyche on that occasion, I think.
Yeah. That's exactly what Tommy was saying.
I hadn't heard that before. I hadn't heard that from Gooch. Like, that's remarkable stuff that he's put it to paper like that.
What was the bit about anger? What was the last bit about the anger and our response?
Maybe the lack of anger in us as a group that day said more about us than we were willing to absorb at the time. A lack of anger, he says. All we gave in Tyrone in return was just noise.
like, so you put that, right? When does Doher decapitate Paul Galvin? What point of the game is that?
20 oh, minutes in, I want to say.
In the first half, yeah, he gets a booking.
Yeah, a booking. It was like, and this is just after, this is 2 years after David Marsden. Was it 03? Was Marsden? Yeah. So Marsden got sent off for far less.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, certainly the referee decided this is going to be an all-time great game between two all-time great teams, and I ain't getting, I mean, I couldn't remember his name. It was like, I'm not going to be famous at the end of this.
McMahon, yeah.
Yeah, get up and play there.
The refereeing back then was a bit random. Like, I ended up watching Laois Kildare yesterday, and there was two red cards for absolutely nothing in that game, the 2003 Leinster final. So I don't know what was happening with the refereeing back then.
Probably got to the final and said, listen, don't be, because William Kirby could have been sent off for two separate instances in the space of 10 seconds and got a booking. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah, William Kirby. Absolutely. Stone Cold Steve Austin. Two people. Is it McGuigan and then it's Canavan as well? Two of them, he just lands to the floor. And go on, Ty. Like, I just think that at some time, like after I saw the Kirby thing, I was like, right, so there was clearly an element of, there was a violent streak in the Kerry players as well. Like they're not necessarily shrinking violets, but maybe it's only in these games that they look like they are.
I didn't really feel like they were, to be honest with you. Like, and I can understand the lack of anger. Maybe, I don't know what Gooch wanted there. Is it a brawl? Like, when Mick Monaghan tells him not to retaliate, that's a fairly standard thing for a referee to tell a player who's lying on the ground. I've played in a full forward line, and I've ended up with my hands holding my face plenty of times in club football where linesmen and referees haven't seen what's happened. A lot of the time, it's been something accidental that ended up hurting me or something like that. But, like, you're told not to retaliate. And if you retaliate, I'd be the one who'd be going to the line. So, like, the thing about that moment is, and, like, I think Gooch's words let us know just how important it was. That was 9 minutes in. Kerry winning by 2 points. The play doesn't restart for 3 minutes. And when it restarts, Liam Hassett has been booked and Tyrone have free inside the 45, the far side of the pitch. Kerry had been attacking and get turned over when Gooch went down on the ground. Like, that's 3 minutes later, momentum completely gone. Kerry's fantastic start is over. And if it was a premeditated move, geniuses.
Yeah, like I think that has to go down as one of the moments of the match. I'm not sure what else kind of sticks out to you. We'll get to Canavan's goal in a moment, but there are...
Are we doing moment of the match?
Yeah, I think you wanted to come in on something on that Gooch incident finally there, Ger.
Yeah, I think that his point about the anger is that, like, so you think about this from Kerry's perspective. This is a game where they're going up to right the wrong of 2 years previous. This is a game where they're supposed to be reclaiming their crown as the best team in the country against a team who, you know, are a bit showy and a bit like, they got us that one time we didn't know about it. And they've only other beaten other Northern teams, which we always beat them. And yet, when your best and talismanic player is getting assaulted, nobody comes in to defend him. There's no one-in-all-in mentality that the Boyle and Meath team always had. If one of us goes down, all of us go to war. And it was weird to see that, because that's what I would have assumed the spirit of that Kerry team was. And that's what it looked like against everybody else. Maybe they were so far ahead of all the other teams that they didn't need that sense of, okay, we're all going to, if anybody comes after Gooch, there was no minder for him, is essentially. There was no minder for him. There was no minder for the incident that's going to happen. They, you know, we know something is going to happen. What are we going to do when it happens? Nothing. And that seems to be what Gooch is saying, which is pretty damning, really.
On that, Jared, there's one slightly similar moment that happens in the game, and it's on the stream I'm watching here. There's about 5 minutes to go, and Tyrone are winning by two at the time. And a ball goes into Peter Canavan on the floor, and he rolls it and he wins it. And it, like, he scoops it off the ground, like, but like he ends up winning a free. It's a soft enough free, but he gets absolutely landed by Tom O'Sullivan. It's a Philly Jordan ball into him. And Tom O'Sullivan and Aidan O'Mahony nail him, and they leave a bit on him extra afterwards. And four or five Tyrone boys come in afterwards. They don't lose the free, but, you know, they're patting Canavan on the back, and O'Neill slots it over the bar. Like, I don't know whether you have to start an all-out brawl sometimes, but there was no messing with Peter Canavan after he got nailed that time.
No. And, like, Canavan, when you're talking about the dark arts, I think it's the last second of the game, Canavan wrestles Gooch to the ground with a complete third-man tackle, which obviously would be a black card now. There was no black card at that point. But they were going to do that. They were going to do whatever it took. I think that there's that bit of difference. There's a ruthlessness within that Tyrone team that separates them, in my mind, when it comes down to who's the best team, from that Kerry team. Kerry were undoubtedly one of the most lavishly gifted group of footballers and men that you've ever seen assembled together But when it came down to the championship minutes in this match, Tyrone had that little bit more steel.
On that Canavan pull-down, and it's actually more to do with the Canavan goal, actually, because this is the only other passage I want to read from Gooch's book, and it's actually more of an interesting insight to Cooper and to the Kerry team. He says, Canavan scored a class goal on the stroke of half-time from a Mulligan knockdown, then Hart took him off for a breather before sending him on again to close the deal. More evidence of how they were rethinking the game. We ended up chasing the game, and in the dying seconds, Canavan pulled me down with a virtual rugby tackle as I sprinted to take a return pass. Their best player doing whatever it took. Not giving a shit what anyone might say on that evening Sunday game. He'd been blackguarded enough himself across the years. So could you really blame him? And, like, I mean, it's almost the part there where he says more evidence of how Tyrone were rethinking the game, which kind of stands out to me, just this appreciation where you're on the pitch and you're like, okay, this bunch of players who are on the opposite end of the line to us are doing things and thinking about the game of football in a more advanced way than we are, which just must be a huge regret for anybody who realises the talented teammates that he had, the talent he had within his own two boots, to think to himself, God, we've been outthought here. Like, it's such it must
be
such a shame.
He wins six All-Irelands, though.
Hmm?
He wins six All-Irelands, doesn't he?
He does, but like...
Scooch of six?
Like, so he's on the second rung of All-Ireland Kerry winners. You know, the second generation down, or the third generation down, if you want to include the 1930s. Like, I just think that anybody who achieves big things in sport will always have what-ifs. But this just seems like a glaring what if. Like a sort of, I can't believe we've been outthought once. We get a new manager, we get outthought again. We get another new manager, we get outthought again. And I just think 05, this was at its most glaring, that you look across and you just see what Mickey Hart has done. And I don't know how many more times I can say this, but like, it just must be soul-crushing for someone like Gooch if this is the thing that he takes away from this rivalry.
I think that we can't forget how good the Tyrone players are. So, like, Mickey Hart has not been able to do this with another group of players. And, you know, the dark arts is not the thing that I remember Peter Canavan for. Like, the goal and his final score that he gets, which I think is the second last score, off an impossible angle. Did he kick it with his left foot? No, it's over his shoulder.
No, it's right. Yeah,
it's wide.
It's
100% wide.
It's my moment of a match, and I want to come to that in a minute.
Okay, sorry. I don't. I mean, I hope it is wide, because that would just be sweet, sweet, sweet. But I also wanted, in the first 2 minutes of the game, Brian McGuigan mentioned this in a piece he wrote for offtheball.com, which Tommy tweeted out 2 days ago. He has this amazing pirouette where he gets the ball over his head and flips it straight into McGuigan's path. McGuigan hits the side netting. Maybe he should have gone across the goal. Definitely should have hit the target. But it was just this beautiful piece of skill from Canavan, which nobody remembered. I didn't remember it until, like, I remember at the time going, Jesus, it's real pity no one's going to remember this. And sure enough, I didn't. But then watching it again, you're like, that was amazing. Canavan was absolutely sensational. Well, this is last.
I'm gonna have to watch it back. I don't remember that. I'm going to have to look back at that.
First five minutes.
Okay.
I think, like, we just, again, I know we've mentioned this twice already, but we just need to come back to the talent on the pitch on this occasion. That, like, you can talk about 08, you can talk about I don't know, sometimes when it comes to these great GAA powerhouses, they are like ships passing in the night, that you kind of wish you got a certain team up against another team at a certain point. You've got Peter Canavan on the same pitch as Colm Cooper here. You've got Seamus Moynihan on the same pitch as Sean Kavanagh here. Like Gooch and Kavanagh only retired within the last 5 years. With Canavan and Seamus Moynihan, these are 90s icons. Like, 2005 is the perfect Petri dish for all these sort of things to happen. And we're so lucky that this actually happened in a final, and that it happened on a perfect day. It happened with Mickey Hart being a bit of a genius on this occasion, and with the Canavan trick up his sleeve. Like, I know that I'll never be able to appreciate this because I'm truly not neutral. I'll come into this as hard as I try. But it's the perfect situation. It's the perfect situation for any neutral coming to a final. The two generations coming to pass. And, like, it's not ships passing the night on one occasion. We're lucky that it's not.
No, and this is, like, the proper what if these two teams had met. Like, what if Dublin, if the current Dublin team were to play either of these two teams, I mean, I'd love to see exactly what would happen. But the other thing they have in the background for context is that the Armagh side that Tyrone had to get over, actually didn't get over.
Like, how many replays? How many replays did it take? Yeah.
And so they get over them in the semi-final. Sorry, but they got beaten in the Ulster final that year. And they got beaten in a load of the games. They got beaten every year in Ulster, essentially. And beat them in Croke Park whenever... Oh, sorry, the Ulster games are all held in Croke Park because Clonus was being rebuilt at the time. But, like, you forget that there's 80,000 at Ulster finals around this time as well, which, you know, like, this is a golden era for great teams coming together. And that Armagh team, remember, are vastly superior to the Mayo team over the last decade or so because they managed to win in All-Ireland. So, like, you're Hall of Fame Tyrone, Hall of Fame Kerry, Hall of Very Great Armagh driving them on as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I was kind of trying to equate Mayo to Tyrone, just minus the All-Ireland there, given the arc of their qualifier routes. But maybe that's a stretch too far. Owen, I've literally forgotten one of the things that was in my brain that I'm going to come back to in a moment. But I would like to know, like, I've already professed my love for Brian McGuigan and Philly Jordan. As an 11-year-old mad Kerry fan, who were your heroes growing up? Because, like, this was Declan O'Sullivan, like, running, soloing the ball, left foot, right foot, going up the field. This is, for me, the one time, I wasn't privy to watching on Gaelic play all the time, but Daro O'Shea doing what Daro O'Shea does, Tomás O'Shea doing what Tomás O'Shea does, and Mark O'Shea selling solo dummies up the field. Like, this is the three O'Shea's, like, on fire together in the one game. Not on fire, probably, but, like, they're all at the peak of their powers, let's say. Who were your heroes growing up as a Kerry kid?
Right, it's a good point. Like, I mean, how good was that Caltra team to beat on Gaeltacht in that All-Ireland final at that time? Like, the heroes, Seamus Moynihan and Colin Cooper, for me, absolutely. Those two were a class above everybody else. Like, and your point on the O'Shea's, like, I think Daro O'Shea got outplayed in certain aspects of this 05 final, but I thought Mark and Tomás were pretty good. I thought Tomás in particular was possibly Kerry's best player on the pitch in 05. But for me, it was always about Seamus Moynihan. His unbelievable ability to really, like, he could see the future in my eyes. He knew what was going to happen. Like, you don't worry, if you're 20 points down at halftime, Seamus Moynihan will know exactly where that ball is going to fall at every single second in the second half, and it's going to be okay. He's Mr. Seti. He will turn this game around for you. Don't worry if things are going bad. Colm Cooper will turn things around for you in the second half. Except, of course, if you're playing against Tyrone, as it so transpired. Like, I don't know, there was just magic in both of those. Magic in very different ways. Colm Cooper, no matter where he was, he could get that ball between the posts. He could eke out a goal opportunity for one of his teammates, whatever it could have been. Seamus Moynihan would just be a stopper because he knew where you were going to go. He knew where you were going to move. And, like, I think, really, when you're sitting there in Denali Terrace in 05 after the start that Kerry make, after 10, 12 minutes, you're like, okay, Moynihan's on song. Gooch is on song. This is going to be a very good day. Which I think is testament to what Tyrone managed to do in the second and third quarters, which was just 40 minutes of the best football you're ever likely to see in an All-Ireland final.
I think we just got a peek at our man Rushmore there, did we?
Not necessarily, no.
I'm only joking. Let's not get into it.
Who knows?
Are we getting to moment of the match?
Yeah, let's do it. What else have you got in moment of the match? Like, we've gone through Canavan's goal, Gooch, and him going down early in the first half. What else have you got?
Okay. My moment of the match, right? Like, initially I had been thinking it might be that 90-second montage at the start of the game with all the hits, because that seemed to sum up the intensity. But my moment of the match, Jer mentioned it already, was Peter Canavan's point after 58 minutes. Because the game swayed there in the moments beforehand. Daro O'Shea, who we had mentioned, kicked an iconic point. And next thing, the next camera shot is Mickey Hart lining up Peter Canavan to come on. 2 minutes later, Peter Canavan comes on. Whoops. In the 54th minute. And what's the next thing that happens? Tomás O'Shea roofs the ball into the back of the net. Back to a one-point game. Kick-out comes out. And Daro O'Shea has a chance to level the game. He's to the right of the goals. And he drops it wide. It's a poor wide. Now, I actually think Daro O'Shea had a really good game in that game. And in terms of bossing in midfield, I haven't really seen a player like Daro O'Shea do what he did in that game in a long time. He, like, completely... He was a man out there. He completely dominated. Sean Kavanagh was very quiet. Enda McGinley, I thought, had a good game. Sean Kavanagh was quiet in the first half, but Enda McGinley had a good game, but he was taken off. He was moved out of midfield as well. Like, I honestly think Darcy had a great game. And if O'Shea had nailed that point, it was a draw game. It was a draw match with 15 minutes to go, but he puts it wide and it goes up the pitch and Tyrone runs the field. Pascal McConnell kicks it out, runs the field. Stephen O'Neill gets bottled up and he throws it back to Peter Canavan. And you have to watch this a couple of times. It's a shot over the shoulder. It's the angle where you see that he's actually 8 yards out from goal and the ball arcs towards the point, the post, and he curls it. And Seamus Moynihan is waving frantically that it's wide. You're saying he can see the future. Maybe if there was Hawkeye, it would have been a wide. Because I still can't tell. I'm looking at it right now, and I still can't tell. It's rolling here in front of me. I can't tell whether or not that ball went over the bar. But for me, moment of the match, winning the 2005 All-Ireland final, that's the moment that defines a decade of Gaelic football.
It doesn't make a difference in my eyes. I think that's definitely right. Tyrone are going to find a way to win this game, I think. I think, as much as it pains me to say it, I think Tyrone were always going to find a way.
I don't know. That's you giving yourself comfort there. That's like, oh, sure. Look, best team won. Let's not think too much.
I think it's a cop out. I think Kerry bottled this game, lads. I think Kerry bottled this game on numerous occasions, honestly. And I'm not saying, but, like, bottle is a word that gets thrown aloud, around a lot. I genuinely think, I'm just putting, like, Canavan 6 or 7 yards out there when he curls that over. But, like, Kerry bottled this game. They absolutely bottled it.
Bottled it in the preparation or bottled it in...
No, forget about the preparation. You've made a great point about the arrogance and the legacy issues of Pat Bland's comments. That's all well and good. They bottled this All-Ireland final. Like, whether it's Gooch saying the lack of anger, Kerry had numerous chances to win this All-Ireland final. Both teams are at their absolute peak here. They're at their peak in the decade in 2005. And Kerry could have easily won this All-Ireland final on a number of occasions.
I think Kerry could have been at their peak this year is what I would say with that comment about bottling, actually, which is what I would say, that if you were going to question something seriously, it is preparation. And it's actually one of your own points about Donaghy. Like, I think Donaghy is part of the peak of Kerry in that decade, and he was available but not used in that particular year, perhaps because they didn't feel they needed to use him because they went through the front door because they were all Ireland champions. But they turned to Donaghy in a time of need, and that was when they got the best out of this management. That's when Jack O'Connor was at his best, when his back was up against the wall, as it was early in 2006. So I think that's where it fell down. But I hear you. I definitely do. Like, it's such a hard thing to put your finger on it, and whether or not you can actually call that bottling, as in, like, given the conditions that were there, given the game plan that they were given, and the preparation they'd done until that point, they go out that day, do they choke? Like, maybe.
Like, maybe. Hearts after playing his party trick. Hearts after bringing off Peter Canavan at half-time. He has, as you said, all ever anyone talked about in the second half was Peter Canavan. He'd scored that goal. Like, you guys are questioning what's going on here. He scored his goal before half-time. All anyone's talking about for the first 18 minutes is, why has he brought off Hearts? Or why has he brought off Canavan? Is he going to come back on? He brings him back on. Tomás O'Shea buries a goal. A point in it. Dara has a chance to level it. He has a chance to level it. And somehow, he misses. And somehow, Kerry allow Tyrone to squirm their way up the field. And for Peter Canavan, I don't know how he puts that ball over the bar. But that's the winning of that All-Ireland final.
We watched this on the TG Car replay, but there was no score and there was no time. So when, how long, so I watched the second half gone. How long's left? What's the score?
So then, it is 23 minutes into the second half here. So there's 12 minutes to go.
When Canavan scores that point?
Yeah, so it's 58 minutes, roughly.
What was very weird, I thought, and quite pronounced in when they're behind, is that Kerry become a jazz ensemble where a couple of lads are working together, as opposed to, here's our plan of action. Here, so we just did Gladiator with Dermot Kennedy last week, and when they're all back in, when they finally make it to Rome, Maximus says, "Was anybody in the army? Let's form a proper phalanx here and be organized." There was no sense of organization about what Kerry were trying to do. There was no Maximus. It was Dara on his own. It was Tomás on his own. It was Declan on his own. And they were getting overwhelmed by the swarm of the opposition's team. I thought that was quite pronounced in the second half, from way early on. So you're saying 58 minutes, when that's,
yeah, like,
for the last 12 plus, I don't know, there might have been no stoppage time. There probably wasn't. Maybe 2 minutes if you're lucky for an All-Ireland final, an extra bonus three. There was no sense that, okay, well, let's work the ball to Gooch and try and do something. Even when Mike Frank Russell drops the ball in with the last kick of the game, for, it's like, what are you trying to do here, lads? How are you trying to fashion an opportunity? It was too random. And certainly, I mean, if they had Donny on the bench, it's madness not to use.
I think that there is a case to be made for that exact point, but also for the first half. I think that was symptomatic of Kerry throughout the entire game. I think it summed up, to go back to my moment of the match, Canavan's goal, by the fact that that is Owen Mulligan's goal as much as it is Peter Canavan's piece of magic dust. Who is marking Owen Mulligan? Paul Galvin.
Paul Galvin. And, yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Wow.
That I think sums up where Kerry were at in terms of reacting to Tyrone at that moment. They just found themselves in sixes and sevens at too many vital moments, and it was the moment of the match, which you find you have your wing forward on one of the most explosive forwards in the game at the moment, who sets up Peter Canavan for an outrageous finish. So Like, it's obviously not Galvin's fault. It's where was your full back line? Where was the covering? What was the plan that ended up in Paul Galvin marking Owen Mulligan?
Yeah, and who's Mark Canavan? Like, how does he lose you on that run to the point where it's actually Galvin who is the one who marks Mulligan and then has to leave Mulligan and go and chase him to try and do a full-length diving save?
Like, we wax lyrical about the dubs and their running lines and their backdoor cuts, and rightly so, and Kieran Kilkenny hand-passing the ball to Conor Cannon and a Paul Mannion stands out in their memory. But when you pause this, where Mulligan has his hands on the ball and Canavan makes that cut, it's just poetry. Hmm. It's unbelievable.
We should talk about our secret man of the match. I can't remember who actually got...
Who is the actual...
I'm trying to... Was it like Stephen O'Neill was obviously Footballer of the Year, but I don't think he was man of the match in this occasion. Like, I presume Peter Canavan would have been man of the match given the vital scores and given the narrative around him, maybe.
McGuigan,
Enda McGinley and Ryan McMenamin would have been the three that I would have picked out here. As like, obviously McGinley gets taken off, so it's between McGuigan and McMenamin outside of Canavan for me for secret man of the match.
Is this the year that McGinley plays with the broken neck? Is it this year or is it 03 where he gets his vertebrae broken early on and Peter Canavan is over in his face going, get up, don't show them you're in pain.
Peter Canavan, that definitely wouldn't have been 08 anyway.
No, so that rules that out. So it's either this one or...
I think that was 2003. It was,
okay. All right, well, I was going to say he played pretty well for somebody with a
The 2005 All-Ireland Final Man of the Match was Muggsy, Owen Mulligan.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Owen Mulligan. Yeah, he had a good game. He kicked.
Good game.
Beautiful point. He had a good game. Definitely a good game.
A couple of bad wides. Didn't he have a couple of bads?
He definitely had one or two bad ones.
Stewart had a bad wide. He had a bad wide.
McGuigan butchered had a bad wide. Unbelievable goal chance.
The goal chance comes minutes. Off the. That's the one that. The build up to that.
Brian McGuigan or Brian Mulligan's or Owen Mulligan's?
McGuigan's goal chance comes off the incredible bit of skill from...
That's 17 minutes in. And how... Like, do you remember Stephen O'Brien's goal chance for Kerry against Dublin last year?
The save.
Oh, yes.
The save.
Yeah.
And if you pause that, and it might be harsh pausing these moments, but like, Stephen O'Brien buries that straight down the middle of Stephen Cluxton, and he has so much room to slot it to Cluxton's left. Once again here, Brian McGuigan is coming in. And I wouldn't question a man of Brian McGuigan's talents, but I don't understand how he didn't open his body and slot it into the corner. He tried to bury it into an angle that wasn't there at the near post. For me, Brian McGuigan's my secret man of the match. He kicked 3 points. He controlled the game. He was a conductor. Like the narrative this year. He had what? The head taken off him. Yeah, he got a yellow card with about 10 minutes to go.
I couldn't see
it. It was kind of dragging a man back. It would probably be a soft black card nowadays, but he got a good yellow card with 10 minutes to go. His 3 points were just, they were delicious. They were like, his first one, he has a ball and there's two men in him. And he doesn't even sell it, don't he? He just steps to the right slightly. It's like a half step to the right, turns to the left and slots it over. His second score is immediately after Canavan's goal before half time, just as important. Like Stephen O'Neill was magic. Duher was great. Philly Jordan was superb. But there's times in that second half where Brian McGuigan is just like Kieran Kilkenny, perhaps. Say it's 50 yards from goal and he's just passing left and right and he's just pulling the strings. And like the narrative this year was that Tyrone, if they got McShane back from Australia and if they got Conor McKenna back from Australia, they might be contenders for the All-Ireland this year. But back then, if Tyrone had not brought Brian McGuigan home from Australia, if he hadn't decided to, as he wrote it off the ball, to leave his girlfriend behind for a couple of months in Australia and leave Kevin Hughes behind and come home to Ireland, Tyrone would not have been the team of the decade and they would not have won that All-Ireland final.
I want to put forward somebody for a secret man of the match, and I hate that I'm about to do this, but I think Mickey Hart has to be secret man of the match on this occasion. This is his Brian Cody 2008 moment. This is the best performance he ever got out of this Tyrone team. This is possibly the best All-Ireland final performance from any team this century, perhaps of the last 25 years or even since the 90s. It is that good. It is an unbelievable team performance with a game plan that is so flawlessly learned by everybody on the pitch. Magic dust across the pitch. So many talented players and 90% of them played to their very maximum, I would have thought, on that occasion. I would allow them for an error here or there. I'm not going to include errors in this, but in terms of what they brought, in terms of their intensity and in terms of their commitment and their preparation for the game, close to perfect. The Peter Canavan trick, the most famous because it was one of the most successful tricks ever played in an All-Ireland final. In terms of giving a manager credit for how an All-Ireland was won, I think Mickey Hart deserves as much credit as anybody for any of the All-Irelands we've seen recently for this one. And for me, he's my secret man of the match.
That's a good shout. He was very good. Philip Jordan was sensational. The last point is just like, oh, we're playing keep ball. Hang on a second. Thanks. I thought he was all over the place. Nice little bit of a, oh, ref, he got me, he killed me. And then I like, I'm okay again. I thought
Philly plays the ball. Philly plays the ball to Muggsy as well for the goal.
Yes, he does. And it's like into that corridor of uncertainty. He was great. Sean Cavan in the second half was good. As you said, in the first half, he was kind of like certainly getting to grips with the game. I thought McGuigan was man of the match. And in my head, certainly back in the day, I don't know why Mulligan. I think Mulligan obviously had scored that goal against Dublin that year. And yeah, so I'd be interested to know who picked that. But like,
let's talk about trending and most jarring moments from the game. So, like, trend stuff that kind of stuck out to me, anything we watch on this time, we kind of know. We've got the loose/breathable jerseys. You've got brand names like Azuri and O2 up in all the hoardings, which kind of spoke mid-2000s to me. Like, the one thing that really actually does jar with you when you watch this era back is just kickouts. Like, it seems like such an obvious thing, not just from the fact that they're taken halfway up the pitch after every score, but also just how much of a lottery it was. Like, really? Like, you're picking a side of the pitch. Maybe you're overloading it by one or two bodies, but that is as technical as they got. And, like, it just everything looks really, really aimless.
Very true. And I think that's why Daryl Shea was able to dominate the skies in which he did. Can I add one more thing to trending?
Yes.
And, like, let's bring them back. TG Cahir, producers, the editors, if you're listening, you know, whoever's running the show on the GA, if you're listening here, reverse angle replays in slow motion.
Yes.
They were absolutely class. They were brilliant. And I don't know what's happened or what way they've tweaked the cameras or the angles. They're not the same anymore. They were so good around that time. I don't know what it is. It's like a, you know, when you look at some a photo in a mirror and it just switches the angle completely or it flips it completely. I don't know what it was, but it was class.
Well, like, I'm not sure that they actually provide as much as you think. I think they made it look nicer. And maybe on certain occasions, they actually did provide a little bit more. Like, you properly got to see a ball going over the bar and things like that. I'm not sure they actually provide as much, but they're definitely noticeable. They're conspicuous when you see them. Reverse angle.
I like
that. Do you feel like, so this is what, 2005, and we're now in 2020. Do you feel like we haven't actually progressed that much in terms of what you see on a match day and what you experience as a TV watcher now from then? Like, when you consider, you know, did smartphones exist in 2005? I don't think they did. I'm almost certain that they absolutely
didn't. The iPod was just out, I think, a year or two, wasn't it? That was in the crappy quiz last week.
The iPod, yeah.
The iPod, yeah.
Yeah. So we're still a bit away from good point of research to do for next round of questions. Like, when you think about it, we should now be seeing way more than we are seeing, right? Like, that didn't feel like it was a game from a different era, and 15 years of extra technology doesn't feel like we've got there yet.
No,
it's true. Like, is this a reflection on sport in general, or is it a reflection on GAA in general? It does feel that there's more cameras at Premier League grounds, and Premier League is, like, when we were doing the Battle of Highbury in the Classic Game Club a while ago, it did feel that we were deprived of content or deprived of angles, whereas now if you watch the Premier League game, it's just ridiculous to depth that they have, whereas here kind of feels like a fairly similar television experience. Like, reverse angles are different. There's obviously been a dipping of the toe into the water of actually having the little thing appear where you can see the kick out and the replay.
The replays in the corner, TG Cahir been doing that. But you two boys consume a lot of American sports. Like, there obviously is a lot more that can be done.
Yes. Yeah, you can have loads more. Like, the referee cam in rugby, first couple of seasons they had it was like wearing a dead weight, and now it's this tiny little camera that the referee has on them, and you actually, you know, you're getting they kind of went away from that in the last 18 months as well. So look, I just think that there is way more that we could be seeing. The fact that Hawkeye didn't exist, for example, you know, like it's great that we do have Hawkeye, so we would now know that Peter Kahneman did score that or kick that wide. But I just, you know, I would like to see a quantum leap forward in terms of the stuff that we're getting, because we deserve it. These games are brilliant.
We should be sure.
Can I add one final thing? Yeah. The most jarring. It's a moment that happens. It's maybe the last 5 minutes or so, and I'm pretty sure it's the hill. And I tweeted a photo of it. I don't know whether you boys saw it. I'm just going to flip my camera here. The smoking ban, to my knowledge, was brought in to effect in 2004. This is 2005. Look at the boys there.
I can't see.
2, 3. Can you see that?
Are they Tyrone boys?
They're Tyrone boys. All three or four of them. And there's a fellow over here in the corner as well. All having a smoke. Yeah.
No, they don't have to be. There's no chance of them getting having to pay any fines. What I found most jarring was the Kerry fan and the Michael Jackson mask.
Oh yeah,
did you see that?
Yeah,
that was freaky and weird. I think by that stage we all knew that Michael Jackson was a paedophile. I'm pretty sure that it was fairly common knowledge at that stage in 2004 2005, and still to show up and to, like, you know, it's Thriller era Michael Jackson. It was just like, why do you go to an Ireland final and make yourself uncomfortable by wearing this sweaty mask all day? Not a great look.
No, it was before we had smartphones, Jared. Nobody knew anything about anybody else. So I'm going to give that Kerry fan a free pass. There's also a Tyrone fan that gets, like, in the middle of Doher making a speech, a pants like some fellow who's got a bit of space after the pitch invasion on the pitch, and he's there, like, lighting up a flare. And the steward walks over to him and is like, what are you doing? And the flare is lighting. And the steward is like, come on, get out of the stadium. And he's like, I kind of want to watch and see the speech. And unfortunately, the camera pans away, so we never actually get to see what actually happened to that. Just one final thing before we get into, like, the final few points, just on the most jarring. This is always a subject we talk about with the passage of time. So when I see Kerry being really naive, that in itself is jarring, because you watch a team from 15 years ago as opposed to how advanced Gaelic football is now. But I think even if you're watching the game in 2005, it is jarring to see two teams in an All-Ireland final with two very different ways of going about a game. Kerry so much off the cuff, Tyrone off the cuff in places, but really with a far more concrete and suitable plan to how they wanted to go about things. That for me jars so much, and it's just hammered home with the passage of time. Right, final things that we get into here. Sliding doors. Where do you want to take this, lads? What do you want to talk about? What changes did Kerry win this game? What does this mean for the wider context of football in the mid-2000s?
What changes did Kerry win this game was they do a 5 in a row. Like, they're the greatest team of all time. That Kerry team were absolutely sensational. Now, what happens if they win that game? Maybe Donaghy doesn't get into the team and they don't end up doing 5 in a row. I don't know. Like, but that's what was up for grabs was the title of, like, all-time great team. And Tyrone went in and they seized it. They went and they took it. Kerry were like, oh, that might be important to us down the road. Maybe we'll get another chance sometime. Oh, shit.
Jerry, you're forgetting one thing. The only thing that was up for grabs in this game was team of the decade. And I'm sorry to hammer that home. I'm sorry to keep going back to it. But if Kerry win that, no matter what happens in the rest of the decade, Kerry, your team of the decade.
No, it's not. Even Eugene McGee.
Sliding doors.
Even Eugene McGee, who would like to stuck the boot into Kerry time and time again during this era, even said in his report after the game that the team of the decade conversation will take some time to actually pan out before we make any assumptions. Now,
I give you a bit of advice. We did a piece last year with Ricey and Kieran Donaghy. Go back and listen to that and then tell me who's the team of the decade.
In fairness, if I was here at Ricey, I'd also say whatever the hell he wanted to hear, so that I am safe and I can walk out of the pub or wherever you filmed it safely. That's all that matters to me. And I don't actually believe that Donaghy actually fully meant Kerry were not the team of the decade on this occasion. It's 5 All-Irelands to 3. That is one of the important... That is, for me, the most important metric for this. Of course. Tyrone versus Kerry rivalry is an important factor, but it is not the be-all and end-all. It is not the be-all and end-all.
Yes, it is.
This is a decade, not 1 year.
It's not the
be-all and
end-all, but it's 80%. It's 3-0. If it was 1-0 and it was the only game they played was this game, if that was the only time that it happened, you'd be like, look, it was one game, caught Kerry a bit cold, but Kerry won... More All-Ireland, it's like, I'm sorry, but that was the best team of the decade. And this was the game where it was up for grabs. Kerry have no qualms. There's no comeback, because Kerry went through the front door. Everybody was fit. You had Moynihan still in the team. You had Dara Kaneja still in the team. You had
Brosnan.
Dara still in the team.
Well,
it's not, you can't complain. Tom Sullivan, it's what a
day. There's a lot there. Like, first of all, the whole backdoor notion and like going through the front door being a massive advantage. Kerry themselves have proved that a couple of times, that that is just a nonsense, that actually going through the front door is the better option, and that Tyrone were this frail past their peak beasts that were there for the taking, and Kerry couldn't even do that. Like, that's just nonsense. That's just not a real argument. I will let you come at me with your remaining team of the decade arguments before I just have a couple of points to make on that, because like we are obviously not going to reach a conclusion. I'm not going to move from my position, and you are not going to move from your position. I accept that.
It's two against one here, Owen. It's
3-0. It's not 2-1. It's Donaghy.
It's 3-0. It's 3-0.
They played each other three times in the course of a decade. 10 years.
Oh, 10 years. In all Ireland finals. In all Ireland finals.
Years.
Oh, three. But like, it's not like...
it's an important factor, but like, it's three occasions. They were spread 5 years apart. Those games. Like,
from 3 to 08. It spanned a generation. It spanned the whole decade. It spanned the decade. 03 to 08.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was 03, 04, 05. It was 03 to 08.
Like I hear what you're saying, and it is a factor in all of this. But I say what is actually a bigger factor than that is Kerry winning 5 All Irelands. Kerry getting to winning back to back All Ireland, something Tyrone couldn't do. How can we how can we never a Cork team that beat Cork or a
two
Cork team
Mayo.
That beat Tyrone?
Two against Mayo.
A Mayo team that beat Tyrone. Like are these teams so pathetic? And they actually beat Tyrone. Like, where does that leave Tyrone if these teams are so pathetic that they actually found themselves in a position where Cork and Mayo actually beat them? Like, this whole notion that Kerry gets slapped down because they beat Mayo and Cork in All Ireland. It's a little weird with me. Well, how can we never judge? Like, okay, so sorry, just one thing. I really want to make this point. Whenever it comes to the Tyrone versus Kerry team of the decade argument, people like you will always make the argument about, well, here is how Kerry fell down in this argument. Totally fair. How can we never analyse where Tyrone fell down across the decade?
Well, primarily Tyrone fell down. They came up against that Armagh team, their passage to get to play matches against Kerry involved overcoming a very, very, very good team.
Well, hold on a minute. Can I just challenge that?
Armagh were vastly superior to Cork.
Vastly superior, not sure. Better team, give you that.
Vastly superior.
I don't know about that, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, Cork.
How many All Irelands did Cork win in that decade?
Well, they got to two All Irelands. They got to two All Irelands. They end up getting over the line in 2010, which is actually the product of the 2000s. That is a product of the 2000s Cork team. 2010 is a product of what they do in the years previous. They beat Tyrone in 2009. Tyrone are All Ireland champions at that point. They get to two other. They get to two All Ireland finals in that time. I think Cork are an absolute.
Tyrone are finished in 2009. I think 2008 is the end of that Tyrone team. I think that's fair.
Well, okay, we definitely agree on that. But I just want to challenge you on one thing there, where you talk about Armagh being the low ebb for this Tyrone team. That's not true. Like, the low ebb for this
Tyrone.
Not
the low ebb.
The challenge.
As in the challenge. So they have to overcome that challenge. I didn't say low ebb.
Okay, let's analyse the low ebbs of this this decade for Tyrone. Like, scoring 6 points against Laois in 2006 when you're All-Ireland champions. One of the most pathetic defences of an All-Ireland title that there's ever been. Like, at that point, 2006, it's like, all right, we're the best team in the country. Time to defend our title. Let's do it. 6 points they score against Laois. Knocked out of the championship and their backs, their arses are up against the wall. Come back the next year, they're back. Tyrone are going to be back. Come up against Meath. No offence, Tommy, in an All-Ireland quarter-final. Meath beat them.
Hey.
I'll accept there were low points for Kerry in this decade. Meath in 2001 was their low point, without question. Outside of that, dessert, like, oh, it is clearly the second moment throughout this decade. But you've got the first All-Ireland of the decade, the last All-Ireland of the decade. You've got a back-to-back in the middle. Tyrone, an unbelievable team. And yes, this is a debate. Of course it's a debate. I'm not saying it's not a debate. But I just think because of what Kerry achieved and because of the lows that Tyrone stumbled upon, Kerry edged this debate.
Can I just say, you've made a compelling argument and I've heard it a lot. I've sit beside you in the office when we're in the office together. I've heard it before. But let me just say one thing. If this is all going to be factored into the debate about team of the decade, another thing that has to come into it is the context of the county themselves and how the county themselves view themselves. How do the county themselves stand amongst history? Like, when we talk about the Mount Rushmores, we're leaving it up for debate for each county to decide upon who is on it. So Mayo, for example, have folk heroes. Dublin want to split them in four. Cork have all their legends as well. But when it comes down to it, what did Tyrone have? these minor winning teams in the 90s, what did Tyrone have to say, that's where we want to get to, that's what we want to aspire to? I remember reading a couple of the autobiographies back then and being struck by the underdog nature of that story. And for me, when you talk about the low points from Tyrone, that just shows how human they were as a team. I'm getting a call here, sorry. That just shows how human they were as a team. Kicking 6 points against Laois, I understand that. I can see how that can happen to a team. Like, in 2005, Kevin Hughes had left. Brian McGuigan had gone. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't hang around. They had their lives. They'd won their All-Ireland. They were top of the world. It didn't matter. Like, they were dealt with that devastating blow of Cormac McAnallan in 2004. Like, the whole story of the decade isn't how many All-Irelands. Like, the numbers matter. The numbers matter. But it's the narrative. It's the story. It's the fact that Kerry, when they had it in 2005 on, they had the chance to do it. This was not a debate. If Tyrone had two All-Irelands, it's not a debate. And Kerry had the chance to squash Tyrone that day, and they didn't. They let it go because Tyrone had something on them. Tyrone had their mark, and Mickey Hart had their mark.
On those occasions, 100%, Tommy, couldn't agree. And like, I mean, like, but in fairness, it is a huge factor. Like, I'm not saying you brush off the championship meetings that they had with one another, but there are other factors at play. There are significant other factors at play. What I will say is that, of course, that Tyrone team within their own county will be more revered than this Kerry team will be remembered in their own county because of the competition they've had from other decades, for example. But if you're comparing one team with the other, boy, what a brilliant collection of players they both were. I just think Kerry just edges it just about. And like, this was a debate
right away.
This was more All-Irelands. More All-Irelands.
And that's all that matters.
No, doing back-to-back All-Irelands. Actually having sustained greatness from the start of the decade to the end of the decade. Tyrone, there.
You do accept that the Munster Championship is complete bullshit versus the Ulster Championship, right? So already it's more difficult to win coming from their province. They're already handicapped. Like, so the value of an All-Ireland coming through Ulster, it's actually more difficult. Just like by any metric, subjectively or objectively, it is more difficult to win All-Irelands coming from Ulster because of the way the football championship is completely irrationally organized as a result of how the Brits decided the county system was going to be and whatever the provincial lands that Maeve stole when she got the brown bull. I don't even remember. I don't even know the mythology around it. But for whatever reason, it's much more difficult to be an Ulster county and win these. And as Tommy says, rightly, this is their first ever All-Ireland. That means that's a so much more difficult thing for them to do. Coming into the decades, you already had a team that was festooned with All-Ireland winners backboning the Kerry team. So,
and you know what? Maybe a greater cause, sure. Maybe a greater cause. You know, like, actually, that explains why Tyrone were always at it a lot more than Kerry were in their big occasions. A much bigger cause. It's like, right, we've got up to the hill once. Let's prove to everybody this was not a fluke. That's the cause they had in 05. Whereas Kerry, it was like, let's prove to everybody why we're actually the best team in Ireland and we're the best footballers in Ireland. Like, they're two very different causes. There is a lot more determination that can come from the Tyrone cause, I would have thought.
Yeah, and I would say that that's a significant failing from Kerry. It goes back to Gooch saying, we couldn't match that. We weren't as good a team as this. And how can you, as a footballer, view your achievements over a period of time to be superior to a rival who beats you every time you play them?
Like, I think if Gooch was to sit down and actually talk about the whole decade as a whole, I don't think he would say that Tyrone were the better team over the course of a full decade, or the better county, the team of the decade. I'm not sure would he actually come to that conclusion. I think in 05 it's indisputable.
Can we go back to the point earlier on when you were talking about Gooch and you said you felt that he must think that they underachieved?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Well, like, I think there's a it seems like a bizarre thing to say. Five All-Irelands in a decade and to think that there was an underachievement. The game we've just watched ourselves, I don't think any of the three of us can say that Kerry were as well prepared as their opposite number on that day. They were as well set up. They were as well drilled. And that, for me, no matter who you are, no matter what county you are, that has to give you a lot of regret. That actually, we have the talent to go out. And as you say, Ger, put yourself in the ballpark for a five in a row. Like, even after this, like, that is why 08 is I'm not ready for 08. First of all, I'm not ready for 08, and I never will be ready for 08. I never will be ready for 08. This is the one that will get you down forever. For me, 09 is the best Kerry team that we had. It's very similar to 08. It's not too dissimilar to 07 as well. That you have this unbelievable run from 06 to 09.
How did you lose in 2008?
I don't know, Tommy. I don't know.
I don't remember this game.
Genuinely, the longer Owen talks here, I actually think he's talking himself out of actually backing Kerry for team of the decade.
Owen, the points
you're making there about preparation.
They're excellent.
They're really good, but they're actually serving the Tyrone cause here.
My point is that Kerry underachieved and still won 5 All Irelands. That is the mark of the team of the decade for me.
There's such a thing as a soft All Ireland. And if you combine that with a team as exceptional as Kerry's were, talent wise. But this Kerry team is very different to this Dublin team.
This whole notion of soft All Irelands, it's to do with Kerry's utter dominance in All Ireland finals that has translated into soft All Ireland. Let's face that here. This is the most outrageously talented team of this decade.
And when they were challenged, they lost. They crumbled. They were brittle.
They didn't have the anger.
That's only in the Tyrone games, really. They were challenged by Armagh. They got that revenge. They were challenged by Dublin on a couple of occasions.
Armagh beat them in the All-Ireland final. They were 1-8 to a point up against Armagh. They had them on the rack and they got beaten.
So you've shifted the goalpost from Armagh.
You said they beat Armagh. Just Armagh at some point.
I'm going to shut up after this, right?
But a little earlier, about probably 2 hours ago, Owen made a wonderful point about arrogance after 03 and how Kerry didn't learn from their mistakes. Can I just make one recommendation for people of Kerry? Take that decade, the 2000s, and put it in 2003 as an example. So why don't you just learn from the 2000s? And perhaps now...
The 2020s, terrible times.
You had your 32 in 2003 and you didn't follow it up in 2005 because you didn't learn from the mistakes. Learn from the mistakes of the noughties and win, be team of the deck in the 2020s. That's what I'm saying. You're not learning from your mistakes. You're bringing that arrogance into the debate here again. You're not learning from
my last point. Actually, I would actually challenge that completely, Tommy. I would actually say that Kerry went from being the best team in the country, clinging on to the legends of that era, to the point of 2012 when Jim McGuinness comes along and beats them deservedly, and all of a sudden Kerry find themselves in a position where they're like, oh crap, we've got to find new talent pretty quickly here. And they managed to annex an All-Ireland in 2014, which is a very un-Kerry. If you're making the point about the 2000s that Kerry had to be by far the best team in the country to win the All-Ireland, they weren't the best team. They weren't perhaps in the top two teams in 2014 and managed to win an All-Ireland. I would contend that they have learned from their mistakes already.
That's fair.
And they've just happened to come up against possibly the best team of all time over the last 5 years.
One last point, and I'm going to leave it to Gooch on this. The second extract you read out, another example.
Oh, Jerry, we appear to have lost Jerry there.
I wonder if his battery died.
it possibly has. I will actually read out the last passage of Gooch here, because it's a point that he wanted to touch on somewhere here. Canavan scored a class goal, he talks about. Oh, Jerry, you're back?
Yes, I'm back.
Sorry, yeah. you were about to make a point there from Gooch's extract. What were you going to say?
Yeah, what was the line he said about another way of Tyrone leading the thinking or being ahead of the game?
So he talks about Hart taking Canavan off before sending him on again. More evidence of how they were rethinking the game. We ended up chasing the game in the dying seconds, and that's your point, is it?
Sure, look, Tyrone rethought the game, but Kerry were the team of the decades and lost every game they played against.
Well, Jim McGuinness completely changed the game. So is he, Donegal, automatically the team of the 2010s?
I mean, there's a case to be made for that. That's not the argument we currently have.
That's a conversation for another day, boys. Right, okay. We're a long way into this. We've got to do over-underrated.
I think
underrated.
The Dubs are probably...
This is underrated for me, underrated as a game. I think as a Tyrone team, I think what do you mean? I think that as a team, they're perfectly rated. But I think as a game, this is underrated.
I think as an All-Ireland final, this is perfectly rated. It defines a generation of football. It's got the perfect quality of bite, the perfect mixture of bite and quality. And it's two teams at the height of their power. And it gives us the answer to the question we've all been looking for. Jerry.
I think I think the Tyrone team might be underrated. They may actually be as important a team in the history of Gaelic football as any other Gaelic football team. From that population base to win three All-Irelands to get to the point where they've come from nothing to make everybody, including Kerry, think that they don't even understand how the game is being played or evolving is like a seismic explosion. I mean, you think about it, we're watching an All-Ireland final, and we just watched one when we did the Galway-Kildare game, where it's two brilliant teams and one of them isn't Dublin. Like, it's going to be a very long time before we see an All-Ireland final with two brilliant teams, two generational teams up against each other, and one of them not be Dublin. So, absolutely sensational. I would recommend everybody go back and watch it, and absolutely Tyrone, the team of the decade.
It's been a very unpleasant experience watching this game back. It's been even worse chatting with the two of you. You've been terrible company, but I hope you at home enjoyed this. This is the Classic Game Club. Cheers, lads.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.